Hello and welcome to the Total Football Soccer Show, Richmond's first, only, and therefore best football talk program. I'm Taylor.
And I'm Daryl.
And this week on the show...
Real Madrid spent a quarter of a billion euros this summer. Apparently the word recession doesn't translate into Spanish.
We'll discuss the difference between American sports and European soccer, where the only draft system is in the pubs.
We'll give you our expertly researched...
or woefully inaccurate...
predictions for who will win the major European leagues.
The USA traveled to Mexico, where they hope to break the curse of the Azteca, which is also a fitting title for the next Indiana Jones film.
Taylor and myself will list this season's top five players to watch, but not in a creepy way.
And we'll close with the spelling bee, this week featuring German players. But don't worry, umlauts are strictly verboten.
Okay, Taylor, let's talk about money.
All right. As most people may be aware, we've got a lot of different leagues in this country, but they're all pretty much bound by the same restrictions. You've got the draft, trades, and the salary cap. In Europe, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, in soccer in Europe, it's basically a free-for-all. There are no trades, no drafts, no salary cap. The teams buy and sell players for money, and they pay the players however much they like. And up until recently, that's pretty much worked okay. But in the transfers we've seen this summer, it's gone absolutely insane.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. I think there's basically two clubs in particular that we're looking at when we talk about this. And the first would be Real Madrid.
Yeah, the big thing is they signed Cristiano Ronaldo for £80 million, which I think is a world record.
Yes, by a very large amount. That's $132 million.
Wow!
So you get an understanding of how big that is.
And that's not the only player they've bought. They've also signed Kaká for
I want to say €68 million, €68.5 million.
What's that in dollars?
More than €68.5 million. I don't know. I'm not a math major.
And those aren't the only. They've also signed some guys like Benzema for about €40 million, and a couple of other players as well. Yeah. So they've just been spending.
I think right now they're like around €250 million. Euro.
Okay, yeah, that sounds about right.
They've spent,
and that's just on transfer fees. That's before wages, right?
And how are they financing that massive spending?
Well, there are some who say that they're financed by the government, which isn't quite true. What they have done, as I understand it, is they've taken massive bank loans from banks that are very friendly to them, which I think is sort of
I think that's a euphemism for something.
That's a euphemism for basically saying they probably don't have to pay it back, or there's no pressure to pay it back.
Yeah, that's one way of doing it. The other way is to go the Manchester City route. Okay. They've kind of always been the small fish in the pond when you're comparing them to Manchester United, but they were recently bought by the Abu Dhabi United Group, which is owned by Sheikh Mansour bin Zayed Al Nahyan. He himself is worth $33 billion, and his family is worth $550 billion.
So that makes Manchester City the richest football club in the world.
Yes, by far.
So money is clearly no object for Man City, and it appears to be no object for Real Madrid, which is great for them, I suppose. Yeah. But between the two of them, the spending they've done has inflated the transfer market to a level I never thought possible.
Yeah, seriously.
And by inflating the transfer market, I mean that other teams look at how much Real Madrid paid for Ronaldo, and then they raise the cost of the price of their players accordingly, and suddenly everybody's worth twice what they were worth the month before.
Yeah, so you take a club like Manchester United, who got this $132 million or £80 million from Real Madrid. For Ronaldo. And now they're pursuing this Brazilian player named Douglas Costa, who before would be sort of expensive, but not particularly expensive.
Yeah.
And he plays for a club named Grêmio. They're in eighth place in the league currently.
In Brazil?
Yes, in Brazil. He's played 13 games, started 5, scored 0 goals, and they're demanding around £20 million for him.
Yeah, that's just...
It's ridiculous.
That makes no sense.
And it makes absolutely no sense, and it's leading clubs to really not be able to sign big-name players and to make big-name transfers.
And as well as raising the transfer fees, it's raised something more relevant to the American sports market, which is players' salaries.
Yeah, you look at Ronaldo, who... you expect him to sign a big contract, but he's making around 13 million euro a season. That's about $19 million,
and that's just salary.
That's just salary, not including sponsorships and stuff like that, which is out of this world.
So where does that put Ronaldo in comparison to other American stars? Like, how much does LeBron James earn?
LeBron James actually doesn't make that much money currently. He makes about $14.5 million a season.
Okay. I'd settle for that myself.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Yeah. His endorsements are what kind of kills it for him. I think you look at the higher paid players. I think like Alex Rodriguez comes to mind. He's in the 30s, $30 million. And then you kind of jump all over the place. So Ronaldo's doing pretty well, but I think the difference is that you know, with these NBA, NFL, these kind of players, there's a limit to how much they can make.
The salary cap.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no such thing in Europe.
Yeah, and so the danger is that it's just going to go up and up and mm-hmm. up and up, and the clubs are going to go bankrupt.
And so some people, obviously not Madrid or Manchester City, are arguing that these leagues need to impose some kind of salary cap or some kind of cap on spending.
Okay, so is that a good idea?
The only way I could see it as being positive is when you have something like the luxury tax, where clubs that spend way too much money over this limit have to kick back some of it so that the smaller market teams can, you know, afford to keep up. Because you're seeing that right now. Like in England, you have the established big four.
Yeah.
And those are the ones who make the most money, and so they can afford to spend the most and buy the biggest players.
Yeah.
And so if you have them kicking back some kind of funds, you know, your club, like Wolverhampton, might be able to survive more than one season.
Yeah, I suppose in order to reform, I mean, if we were going to reform European soccer, which may have to happen, then you'd have to find a way to limit transfer fees as well as salary. And the one thing that has been proposed is to limit clubs to spending something like 51% of their own income. Mm-hmm. So they can't spend more than they've got, mm-hmm. which is basically sensible
yeah.
for anybody.
Maybe that is a viable option. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I quite like that idea myself because, it wouldn't give us an American-style system where, you know, the bottom team gets first draft pick mm-hmm. and all that. So it wouldn't produce more parity between the teams, which I guess it's too late for anyway, really, in yeah. European soccer, right? But it would mean that the teams that are trying to keep up with each other would be prevented from spending money they don't have and basically ruining themselves.
Mm-hmm. Now, one question I get that I'm going to let you field is why don't they just install a draft system?
Wow, I've never even considered the possibility. My question is, why does American sports have a draft system?
See, I think that's an alright way to look at it.
The good answer to this question is that if you have a draft, because you have relegation and promotion and mm-hmm. different tiers and different countries, it's not just one organization like, say, the NBA is. Mm-hmm. So you can't draft someone into that because then they're not going to be playing at the appropriate level. Like if someone's drafted into the NBA, mm-hmm. even if they're playing for the worst possible team, who's that right now?
The Clippers.
Okay, so even if they're playing for the Clippers, they're still playing in the NBA against other NBA players. But if you're drafted into, if you're in English soccer and you're drafted into a championship team or a League One team, mm-hmm. then maybe that's the wrong level for you. Maybe you should be at a higher division. Maybe you should be in a lower division.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So next time someone asks, you can tell them that.
I'll just play them this audio clip and it'll work a whole lot better and sound a whole lot prettier.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Daryl
and Taylor
on Richmond Independent Radio 97.3, radio for the rest of us. So this Saturday, August 15th, the English Premier League season begins. Taylor and myself both have a horse in this race. I guess we'll talk about Taylor's team first.
Yeah, I am a Manchester United fan, and I must admit, thank you. I must admit that I'm a little less optimistic about this season than I have been in the seasons prior.
Okay, you want to share why that is?
Yeah.
I can guess. But.
Yeah, well, yeah, this offseason we got rid of Cristiano Ronaldo. I guess got rid of for £80 million, but still, he's no longer on the roster. We also didn't re-sign Carlos Tevez, who's a very good player. So we're not quite as strong as we were last season, but we signed Michael Owen.
Yeah, you replaced those players, right?
Yeah, with Michael Owen, who's a 28-year-old injury-prone striker, whose agents have to make a brochure to get him signed.
Yeah, if anyone's not familiar with the whole Michael Owen saga, well, first of all, if you're not familiar with Michael Owen, he was this 18-year-old kid who was like the fastest. He looked like the fastest guy on earth. Mm-hmm. Played striker. He was all about pace, but he's just been injured and injured and injured.
To clarify, that was 18-year-old kid in 1998.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and he's now 28, 29, yeah. maybe. Mm-hmm. And he was relegated with Newcastle this mm-hmm. past season. His stock was at an all-time low because he spent that season injured. Mm-hmm. So his what would you say, his guys, his PR people?
Yes.
Put out a brochure promoting the idea of your team signing Michael Owen.
And as if that's not absurd enough, there was even a section where it just had abstract terms discussing his brand value.
Yeah.
Like one of them would be fit and healthy, yeah. or fit and clean or something.
Fresh.
So,
but Manchester United apparently fell for it.
Yeah, you could say fell for it maybe, but he was a free transfer, which is pretty rare in this day and age, and he's on a pay-as-you-play basis, pretty much. So on the whole, it could be a pretty big signing for us.
Yeah, I suppose it's a good deal. Mm-hmm. But doesn't it sort of reflect the new way that Manchester United are going about things? Like, they used to be the team that spent the money and signed the big players, and this year they're not.
Do you want more salt to rub in those wounds, Daryl? Thank you for that. Yeah, it is true, though. I mean, for a club that's seen as one of the biggest in the world, we've seen some damage done this year with Ronaldo gone and Tevez gone. But honestly, that kind of makes me excited about this season, that we've pretty much resorted to signing youngsters or players that we think we can rehabilitate. And so I'm fairly optimistic.
Yeah, and it might be a good thing, maybe. I mean, they might be the one team that's smart enough not to get involved in the crazy, crazy spending.
I like phrasing it like that, yeah.
But it's the fact that they haven't spent definitely makes the Premier League more interesting this year.
Yeah, and on that note, I think you could also see a pretty common theme that most of the clubs in England got a little bit weaker this summer.
So Manchester United lost Ronaldo to Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. Liverpool lost Xabi Alonso also to Real Madrid because mm-hmm. they apparently are spending all the money in the world.
Arsenal lost Adebayor, who is one of their bigger goal scorers.
And Kolo Touré,
yeah,
their defender.
Yeah.
And Chelsea, they didn't lose any players, but they did lose Gus Hiddink, who was the coach, who was very popular.
Yeah, so and who pretty much turned them around completely last season. They were struggling. He came in and really did do a number on the whole program, and now he's gone. So I think it's going to be pretty wide open at the top. I think it will be equally wide open at the bottom, where your club may be located.
Well, maybe. Let's hope not. Yeah. My team is Wolverhampton Wanderers, or Wolves, as they're known. Mm-hmm. And so we've just been promoted to the Premier League for the first time since 2003. And so the big deal for us this year is staying in the Premier League and not getting relegated.
Yeah, for those who don't know, pretty much every other soccer league in the world has a system of relegation and promotion. So, for example, in England, you have the Premier League, which is the top league, and you have the Championship, which ironically is the second division, you could say?
Second tier,
there it is. And so the bottom three teams in the Premier League at the end of the season will be relegated or demoted to the Championship, and the top three teams in the Championship will conversely be promoted to the Premier League. So Wolves was one of the teams that was promoted last season.
Yeah, which sounds and it sounds terrifying that you can be relegated, but it actually makes the season very exciting down the bottom.
Yeah, like right now, if you're a baseball fan, the Washington Nationals are like 25 games out of the wild card playoffs.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, and so it's pretty much like their season is done. There's nothing interesting about the bottom of the table. You know, you don't need to pay attention to the bottom teams because
if that was in English soccer, then they'd be fighting for their lives because they'd be in danger
exactly.
of demotion, relegation.
And so while you care about the teams at the top who, you know, might win the championship, you also have a stake in the teams at the bottom because it's you don't want to get relegated. There's a lot of money to be lost.
Yeah, not just money. I mean, it's about respect and recognition. Like, you want to be in the Premier League. You want to be mm-hmm. one of the top teams. I want people to know who Wolverhampton Wanderers are. And if they stay in the Premier League, then there's more chance of that happening.
So we've taken a look at the English League. It seems only fair that we discuss the other leagues or the other prominent leagues in Europe.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the big one is La Liga.
Mm-hmm.
I'd even say that La Liga is the big league this year.
Yeah.
Because Real Madrid signed Ronaldo, which is probably the best player in England. Mm-hmm. And then Barcelona signed Zlatan Ibrahimovic from Inter Milan. So he was the best player in Italy. So it's almost like the Spanish league has cherry-picked the best players from the other big leagues.
Well, you might be able to argue that Kaká was the best player in Italy. He's also now with Real Madrid as well. And you have Leo Messi already with Barcelona. So arguably three of the best players on earth are playing in the Spanish Premier League.
Yeah, and I think actually that's reflected here in America by the fact that ESPN have picked up the rights. I think they'll be showing plenty of games on ESPN Deportes, if mm-hmm. I've pronounced that correctly.
You got it, I think.
But there'll also be about 20 or so La Liga games on ESPN2 on the weekend.
And I'm guessing most of those will be Barcelona, Real Madrid. So I got to ask you, who do you see coming out on top in La Liga?
I see Barcelona. Very clear. I don't care how much money Real Madrid have spent. Mm-hmm. Barcelona were the best team last year, and they're going to be the best team this year.
I'll play devil's advocate, and I'll say I think Real Madrid may be able to pull it off. They've signed some pretty big players, but they signed a fair amount of players on attack and defense. And this is also a very, very strong reverse jinx. So I'm hoping Barcelona pull it out, but I'm going to put my money on Real Madrid.
All right, so moving on, let's go to Italy.
All right. Inter Milan have won the past, I would say, what, like 74 years in a row at this point?
I think it's three seasons in a row.
Okay, that's a
bit... Or maybe more.
That's a bit less dramatic. But and actually, they've won four in a row because Juventus, my pick to win this year's Serie A, were stripped of the title in... with an 05-06 due to match fixing, but I'm still picking them this year. Hopefully they don't cheat.
Well, I'm hoping AC Milan, just because of we've got our boy Gooch there.
There you go. Okay.
But I don't know. I mean, I see Inter really doing it again.
Yeah.
I don't see that Juventus signed Diego, but I don't see that they've got their team together enough to...
I'm not sure if I really feel comfortable putting this out on the airwaves, but I have a fairly strong man crush on Diego, and where he can do no wrong, in my opinion. So I think he's going to be a pretty serious influence on Juventus, having signed from Germany. Who I guess we should go to next, the Bundesliga,
the Bundesliga
in Germany.
Okay.
Last year it was won by...
Wolfsburg.
Wolfsburg, thank you. And I'll go out on a limb and say that I'm picking them to repeat just because I haven't seen anybody else make that big of signings or get that much better.
I'm going to go Bayern Munich.
Okay.
Just because they had a bad season last season just gone, and they still finished second and ran Wolfsburg close. They ran them to the last day of the season. So this summer they've settled on a permanent coach, and they kept their best player, Frank Ribery, who was another one who almost went to Real Madrid.
Shockingly.
I know. So, yeah, I see Bayern Munich bouncing back and taking the Bundesliga this year.
Okay, so I guess another fairly prominent league we could talk about would be Scotland. Which of the plethora of teams that usually win that do you see pulling it out?
Oh, there are so many to choose from.
Yeah, you pretty much have Rangers or Celtic, and that's about it.
I'm going to go Celtic.
All right, fine. I'll take Rangers.
It's like flip a coin. Okay.
Oh, my. No. No, it's not okay. I just chose the team with DeMarcus Beasley.
Good.
Yeah, but they have two Americans. They have him and Maurice Adu. So I'm confident picking Rangers.
Okay. Moving on to France.
Okay. I'm going to pick Lyon to come back.
Is that because that's the only team you know?
Oh, Marseille, Bordeaux, Monaco. There's some other ones. The one that looks like it should be Nantes, but it's actually Nantes. So but yeah, I'll pick Lyon. They won what, 7 years in a row before losing to Bordeaux last season.
Speaking of which, I'm going to go Bordeaux to repeat.
Oh yeah,
yeah, because they kept Gourcuff. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he was their big guy last year. He was
Daryl and I clearly took French in high school. Yeah, well, the issue with Lyon was once again they lost their best player to Real Madrid. It'd be Karim Benzema, but they've made some decent signings.
I see a theme here,
yeah, right? But I see Lyon bouncing back and winning it this year.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Daryl
and Taylor on Richmond Independent Radio 97.3, radio for the rest of us.
Yesterday, the United States national team played a World Cup qualifier against Mexico at the Azteca Stadium. And once again, they came back without a win. Their record in Mexico now stands at 0-23-1.
Yeah, it just seems like every time the United States starts to play well, they have to immediately play one game where they play very poorly. To me, the best analogy I can draw is it's sort of like your 19-year-old son that every time you think he's going to move out and get a job, he doesn't. He just keeps playing video games. That's what the U.S. national team is to me at this point.
See, I think maybe you're being a little harsh because the Azteca Stadium is 105,000 Mexican fans, and it's 7,500 feet above sea level.
It's, so it's like 47 miles in the air, pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, so to play like in Cloud City and where players can't breathe, you can't run, I think maybe they almost did well to get away with a 2-1 defeat.
I'll concede that it is very high. I'll concede that it's a very hostile stadium. You could definitely see that in yesterday's game. You could, in my opinion, it may be because I'm American, you may see it differently as an Englishman. I would say that the ref was a touch influenced by that plethora of screaming fans.
I'd say he wasn't fantastic, but you can't blame him for the defeat.
No, definitely not. I'll say that all the factors that you're discussing were definitely at play. But for me, the issue is that, as we talked about last week, when the United States succeeded in this summer's Confederations Cup, it was because they played attacking football. They played, you know, intelligent, creative football. And yesterday, it was defense wins it, hoofs it up the field, and hopes somebody runs on. That's how we scored our first goal in a counterattack. And it seems to me like Bob Bradley, the U.S. coach, just thought, well, that'll keep working. And so that's all we did.
Well, I don't see how else you can play at altitude against an opponent that's sort of equal quality. You can't go at them and run for 90 minutes when there's no oxygen to breathe. Like you have to sit back and defend and counter that. Well, I don't see what else can be done.
So you're implying that only the Mexicans were breathing air yesterday?
Well, they're more used to playing at that altitude.
Okay, so the altitude may play a factor, but it seems to me like you're saying it's impossible to win with that altitude in play.
maybe not impossible, but it certainly makes it very, very difficult.
I'll concede that, but I still think that at some point, you know, Mexico is our major rival in this region. We can't keep losing to them, like especially not like this, not in the last minute or last 5 minutes or 10 minutes.
Yeah, I suppose it can't last forever.
Yeah.
One would hope not. But at the end of the day, it's only one game,
mm-hmm.
and the US still leads Mexico by a point in the World Cup qualification table,
yeah.
and trails Costa Rica by two points.
Yeah.
All right, so the top three still go to the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth place gets a playoff. So yes, it's a bad result. Yes, it hurts to lose to Mexico again, but the United States are still on track to qualify for World Cup 2010.
Yeah, where I hope we get to meet Mexico, and I pray to God that the stadium we play in is at or below sea level.
So every week, Talia and myself pick a top five. This week, we're going to pick our top five players to watch this season. So that's not necessarily the best players. It's the players we're excited to see what they do this upcoming season.
Yeah, going off of that, I'll stick with my number five being Diego. He transferred to Juventus from Werder Bremen in the German league. As I've already said, he's my man crush. But more than that, he's just a really good player, and I think he's perfectly suited to play in Italy. So it should be pretty exciting for him.
My number five is Cristiano Ronaldo.
Wait.
I'm not excited to see him play so much as I'm excited to see how he does at Real Madrid.
Okay.
I sort of suspect that the whole thing of being the most expensive player in the world and all the attention he got this summer and the weird date he went on with Paris Hilton might have made him sort of, I don't know, a superstar in his own head. And
maybe, just a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. And just, I feel like this might be the time where he becomes such a prima donna that his performances start to suffer. So in a way, I'm excited to see him fail.
All right, well then, my number four is kind of a surprise considering he's played and now plays for my two least favorite teams in the world, but it's Xabi Alonso. He transferred to Real Madrid from Liverpool. I wanted to make fun of Real Madrid for their transfer policy, just signing players that I didn't think would work out. But Xabi Alonso is a very good center midfielder.
Yeah, he's a team player.
And he's a team player. I think he's really going to help Real Madrid do well this season, so I'm excited to see him.
Okay, my number four is Mr. Oguchi Onyewu.
Ah.
I'm very, very excited to see what he does at AC Milan. I'm excited if he succeeds. Mm-hmm. I'm not excited if he fails, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, keeping on the tradition of an American who may succeed or may fail, my number three would be Jozy Altidore. He's from Villarreal, but he's actually on loan at Hull City in the English Premier League. It's kind of up in the air how successful he's going to be because I think he's a very good player. I think Hull is a pretty poor team with a very poor coach, so it could...
But that means he'll get minutes.
He will get minutes, and they don't really have any other forward, so hopefully he does well.
So my number three is Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Mm. This is Zlatan.
Just because I feel like he got a little too comfortable at Inter Milan, and there's the whole thing of him not doing well in the Champions League with Inter Milan. Mm-hmm. I think he's never scored in the knockout rounds of the Champions League.
No.
Now he's with Barcelona. He's like a flair player with a great team now. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really excited to see what he does within that Barcelona team, surrounded by Xavi and Iniesta and Messi and all those guys.
Yeah, plus he's like 48 feet tall, so that should help him on the field.
You're obsessed with height.
Well, he's huge. My number two is a bit of a surprise, I'd say. It's Alano. He actually left Manchester City to sign for Turkish club Galatasaray. The move was probably motivated by a combination of money and the availability of playing time, but I don't really care because I love Galatasaray and Alano's a good player and he's going to have an immediate impact, so I'll take it.
My number two is Daniel Sturridge, who's a 19-year-old English striker. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of reason not to like him. He sort of got a few games for Manchester City last year, but then rejected a contract that I believe was like £50,000 a week because it wasn't enough.
Obviously.
Yeah, and so he went to Chelsea where I think he signed another big contract.
It's almost like football players only care about money.
It is. So, but despite his greed, I'm very excited for any young English footballer to come through, so I'm excited to see what he does.
I like it. My number one, being a United fan, he comes first, is Antonio Valencia. He was transferred over from Wigan. He's meant, well, people keep saying he's meant to be a replacement for Ronaldo.
He's the new Ronaldo.
Yeah, you can't do that. You can't replace a player as good as Ronaldo, as much as it hurts me to say. But I think he's a very good winger. I think he's fast. I think he's got a lot of skill. And mostly, I think he's got a lot of potential. And I think he's going to do great things for Manchester United.
You hope.
No, I think. I know.
My number one is Jack Wilshere. He's 17. He's English. And he's got a very good chance of playing for Arsenal this year. Mm-hmm. If you're a young English player to play for Arsenal, mm-hmm. is rare.
That's an understatement.
Even rarer than that, he's an English footballer with a left foot. Which, okay, anatomically, every English footballer's got a left foot.
There it is.
But very, very few of them actually know how to use it. And so what I'm really hoping is that he plays enough this year and impresses enough that we get to take him to the World Cup in 2010.
So that's our top five players we're excited about. If you've got a list of the top five players you're excited about, then email it to us at soccer@wrir.org. So each week on the Total Football Show, we'll be having a spelling bee. Last week, Daryl and I both got our players correct, so it's tied 1-1.
Woohoo.
This week, we'll be doing German players. So, Daryl, I would like for you to spell Stuttgart defender Sammy Caterer.
Wow. I have no idea. I'm just going to guess.
That was the plan.
Sammy is S-A-M-M-Y. Okay, yes or okay, no.
Okay, now, but continue on.
So it doesn't matter. Caterer. God, K-A-I-D-E-R-A.
You can hear the scorn in Daryl's voice.
Am I anywhere close?
S-A-M-I-K-H-E-D-I-R-A.
Okay, I'm going to check on Wikipedia afterwards to see if he actually exists.
I think he does. I'm fairly certain.
Okay, so mine might be a little easier for you. I'm going to ask you to spell Thomas Hitzlsperger, also of Stuttgart.
Okay, Thomas is, I'm pretty sure, the normal way you'd spell Thomas. T-H-O-M-A-S. Yes?
Okay.
All right. H-I-T-Z. L S P E R G E R.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes.
Okay, so Taylor's doing, he's doing guns in the air. That Taylor takes the lead 2-1 in the spelling bee. That's all we've got time for here on the Total Football Soccer Show. Before we leave, I know we joke around a lot on the show, but football lost one of its greats recently. The English coach, Sir Bobby Robson, who passed away at the age of 76. He was much loved by everybody in the game and sort of like English football's answer to Yogi Berra. So we'd like to close the show with a quote from him. "We didn't underestimate them. They were just a lot better than we thought."